Were any of your formative crushes cartoon characters? Are any of your current crushes cartoon characters? If so, welcome to my wonderful, brightly coloured world. I'm comedy writer and 41-year-old child, Gabby Hutchison Crouch, and I do still like a little bit of hot animated stuff. Why are they sexy? Let's find out, with the help of some funny guests who are here for a chat about the animated characters that make little cherubs dance in circles around their heads. Will we find something out about early crushes, pop culture and sexuality, or will we just enthuse about superhero midriffs? Whatever we do, I hope it'll set you at ease that those funny tummy feelings you get from Tony the Tiger's big strong arms are absolutely fine. Give me that sweet, sweet 30% of my recommended sugar intake, Daddy! Welcome to Curiously Drawn! With me this episode is an award-winning playwright, actress and star of the Silt Versus podcast. She and I met on an online role-playing game where she was playing an 18th century forger and I was playing a 19th century coke fiend. But then, don't so many female friendships start like that nowadays. It's Maeve de Brun. Hello!
Hi!
Hi!
Can I just say, like, you know, what you were talking about? You're just reassuring me that all of my feelings are okay. And that's why I'm here.
That's the point of this podcast. It's all okay. And it's normal and it's fine.
It's fine.
It is fine. You know what the best thing about bursting after cartoon characters is? They can't cancel themselves. They can't milkshake duck themselves. Like, they can't, turn 50 and become really reactionary because they're rich. They're just drawings and they will never change and they will never become problematic.
I mean, that's absolutely one of the characters I'm going to discuss today. Was one which hit me in quite a youthful formative year, and I've since gone back to just give myself a refresher and was just stunned at how much I had apparently constructed in my own mind this reality, because, you know, I was able to write my own story and in that story he was perfect, you know.
Well, that's fandom for you, and that's fine. And sometimes I sort of forget that, like, the fan creation that we've got in our heads is not the same as the creation that the creator initially designed. We sort of sometimes I sort of forget what's canon and what's canon, you know.
I was shocked. I was a little bit taken aback at what I had. I had to sit down and think to myself, especially at the youthful age I was at, it was so. But we'll get into it.
Well, I've got a feeling that we're talking about choice one. So choice one is the angsty goth rich boy inventor with a kinda evil lair in his parents' basement. He's good at building robots, but not very good at being bad. It's Shaolin Showdown and Shaolin Chronicles. Not so evil boy genius Jack Spicer. Is this the one that you were talking about, or were you talking about a different guy? Well, we'll get onto him later, but I sort of wondered whether it was this guy, because so I don't know this character at all, so you're gonna have to tell me about him, but from what I could sort of see, he was kind of villainish, but like the fandom has sort of rewritten him to make him much more heroic. But why don't you, because I've never seen these, Maeve's a lot younger than me, and also I don't know if you can hear Irish, so we've got sort of slightly different.
We don't know what's wrong with her, she just talks like
she just talks like that. So we've got kind of different, we're coming from kind of different sort of pop culture references. So why don't you school me on Shaolin Showdown, Shaolin Chronicles, and Jack Spicer, please.
Yes. So I suppose to start off with, I should give a broad overview of my general taste in characters has always skewed to, I actually made a little list. I was sitting down thinking kind of what are all the boxes that they usually tick. Now, so for the show, Gabby, you recommended that I pick three. So I went ahead and I picked three. But we even had this discussion because I originally chose Shaggy as a character, and then I was like, no, I shouldn't choose Shaggy, everyone will want to talk about Shaggy. And then you were like, no. So I was like, right, revealing a little bit about myself there, what is normal. But definitely, generally, in the characters that I've always been attracted to, they always fulfill. I almost was like doing up a little Venn diagram. And then I was like, Maeve, stop, step away. But I definitely have a little list, and usually they're, you know, they kind of tick one or more of the boxes of being cynical, funny in that they're comedic relief, either intentional or other unintentional. Kind, usually reluctantly so. Generally a bastard. Usually an idiot. Very unlucky. And most of all, zero common sense.
Absolutely. Oh, those are all such hot traits. I'm so there for all of those. I'm like, yes, please. Yes, please, you problematic idiot. Get in my face.
Just pure fools is what I enjoy. And generally a lanky fool, if I can get
Oh, a lanky fool.
A lanky fool. Oh, like yeah. What you want in life. So I suppose, you know, just big shout out to, I said I'd leave him alone for today. Big shout out to Shaggy. Also to, not a cartoon, but Rincewind from the Discworld comics.
You see, I really like Verence because Verence is literally the fool. He's got the he's got the lanky, unlucky fool, although he becomes much more lucky, you know, because he ends up married to a beautiful, lovely witch and the king and has all these powers.
He,
but yeah,
he has that brilliant balance of seemingly having common sense but applying it in the worst way possible. He's trying to apply all his modern living ways to a town that is so determined to stick with, you know, just medieval living has always been good enough for us. But that's again absolutely a fool and we love him. So I suppose Jack Spicer definitely ticks a lot of those boxes. It was very interesting. So when I was thinking of cartoon crushes, I just thought it would be interesting to think back as kind of far as I could to back when I was in my early teen years. So that would have been when I was watching a lot of television, but it also would have been when I was watching a lot of television that wasn't available at the click of a button.
Yeah.
And in a way, it made a lot of these characters like more interesting because I didn't have immediate access to them.
you had to schedule your joy. That's something that I've talked about before that's kind of been lost. Like when you were, there was one show that was like, I'd get up at like 7 o'clock on a Saturday to watch it for this character. The sort of the scheduled joy, and it becomes part of your, I totally get that, it becomes like a little highlight of your week.
Yes, absolutely. And again, what played into this too is that in Ireland we didn't have, it was a rare household that had Cartoon Network or Sky TV or anything like that. Like when I was growing up, we had RT1, RT2 and TG Cahir, the Irish language television, and that's what we had. And I remember I was first introduced to Zhaolin Showdown. I think I was definitely in my early teens. I'm going to say maybe around 14, 15. That's my rough guesstimate. But we went on holidays with my dad's friend, his family, and the house we were staying in Portugal had Cartoon Network on the television.
How exotic. So,
oh, this was it. And, it was this complete treat. Yeah. And while we were there, they were doing a Zhaolin Showdown week. And so that was, Cartoon Network suddenly, every so often, it used to just play back-to-back television shows.
Well, this is how I got, this is how I got into the Powerpuff Girls, because when I was hospitalised for Easter weekend, and one of the hospital TV stations was Cartoon Network, and to be honest with you, I was so drugged up for the pain that it was the only thing I could concentrate on. And they were all weekend playing back to back Powerpuff Girls, and I got really, really into it.
But this is it, and when you're kind of dumped into it like that, you get really consumed with it, especially because where we were, to be honest, there wasn't much else to do than either, you know, be outside in the pool or the sun, or be inside watching Cartoon Network. And so those were our two activities for the week we were there. So it was back-to-back Zhaolin Showdown. And then when I left, that was it. There was no more access to Zhaolin Showdown.
Oh, he was like your holiday boyfriend. He was like your cartoon holiday boyfriend.
Exactly.
Summer dreams, ripped up a symbol.
So when you were like, pick a cartoon character, and I was like, Jack, I haven't thought of him in years. So that was it. It's like, the sunlight rippling on the pool outside and Jack Spicer building robots on the television.
What was it about Jack Spicer that that you liked?
Yeah, so I just, again, it comes into that. So he's the bad boy. And again, always a bit drawn to the L villains, you know, mm-hmm. as you do. We love a bad boy.
Yeah.
But again, absolute fool. Absolute fool from start to finish. So Jalen Showdown is, you know, when I came back to it, now it's not really, but my initial, I suppose I was a bit like, oh, we get a bit of an Avatar vibe off this, but actually not really. It's nowhere. It's not like Avatar at all. It's,
I was going to say the sort of redeemable, angsty, rich arsehole with like huge sort of goth energy gave me like massive Prince Zuko trajectory feelings when I was sort of reading up on him. I'm probably going to speak about Prince Zuko and the Prince Zuko trajectory so often on this podcast. I've already talked about it twice, I think.
Character development, so you know, it absolutely deserves numerous mentions.
Somebody must choose Prince Zuko one of these days. One of these days.
Someone's gotta. I will say, like, you couldn't compare Shaolin Showdown to Avatar.
Sure.
It is not. No. But to be honest, it's really just, I suppose, that element of the Asian arts and this mysticism kind of drawn into it. And these children are the chosen ones to fight the powers of evil and all that. Basically, it's about Jack Spicer. He's the antagonist in it, but he is partnered with Wuya, who is an evil witch. So they're searching for the Shengong Wu, which are hundreds of magical items that give power, certain types of powers, to the bearers. So you find a new item that gives you a superpower, you know, a scarf that turns into an extra hand, or a coin when you flip it, it helps you flip, all of that jazz. And Wuya needs Jack's help because she's just a cursed ghost and she can't do anything. So what I love about Jack Spicer initially is that I just think it's hilarious that his introduction to the show, basically in the very first episode, he's already a teenage boy with a lot of robots bent on taking over the world completely separately.
It's just a hobby.
It's literally his plan. When he's introduced, he's like, I really want to take over the world, but I'm not sure how I'm going to go about it. I think I'll probably use all my killer robots. And then, you know, his dad is very rich. His parents are very rich. They don't pay attention to him. He's super tragic. And his dad, like, comes back from a business trip and is like, here's this box, I don't know what's in it. And he opens it and it's Wuya's cursed prison. Then he joins forces with this evil ghost witch. So they have that fun, very funny relationship whereby they're both the antagonists working together.
Sure.
But they kind of dislike each other also. And, you know, she is very frustrated by him and his shenanigans.
Godbots, finish them!
Hey, never tell my guard bots what to do. Guard bots, finish them!
Yeah, no, he's just a fool. He's an absolute idiot. But also he is that, you know, he's that kind of like that goth boy, you know, he's got the eyeliner, he's got the red spiky hair. And I did, you know what, I blame Jack Spicer. I was an emo then in my teenage years. He's a bad influence on me. But yeah, no, he repeatedly constantly calling himself the evil boy genius. He even at one stage, he makes a troop of robotic cheerleaders for himself. Aww. He's just that typical, you know, ridiculous villain, who's not really a villain in the grand scheme of things. And then eventually what happens to him, which happens to all the best villains, he becomes kind of a secondary villain in the face of a much worse one that comes
Yay.
Along. And he's forced to team up with the hero.
Yay! Redemptive arc. I love those.
And it's all played very much like, well, I hate you guys, but, you know, I hate this guy more because he's taking over my gig, and it's great. Aww. And, you know, it's fantastic as well because the other, as far as I remember, the other villain is just like a slightly older teenage boy who's just like better looking than Jack and just better, kind of more athletic, more, you know, better, a better leader, a better soldier, which is just hilarious in and of itself. But I will say that, it's funny again, I went back to watch Shaolin Showdown. What I will say is that rewatching it definitely kind of made me sit back and think, wow, cartoons have really come a long way narratively since those days, because I remember being engrossed by this, but as I was watching it now, it's like, oh god, not a lot of plot, a lot of slapstick, a lot of fight scenes, you know. And again, I will say you could see the progression. I kind of picked a couple of episodes from the start to the middle to the end.
Yeah.
You can kind of see him. And again, I think that happens as well. You can kind of see him becoming more ridiculous and more slapstick as yeah. it goes along, which I do think happens too. But absolutely, when I first thought of, cartoons that I have loved, my first remembrance was of my summer tryst with Jack yeah. Spicer and all his dangerous evil robots.
He does sound worryingly up my street, so I probably shouldn't watch Island Showdown, because you know the whole sort of, he's got all of those, you know, we tick kind of a lot of the same boxes. Also, I had a look at like the fandom wiki, which suggested that A, he's only bad because he's frightened he'll fail if he tries to be good, which I love.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, he has this whole tragic arc, and plays into his joining up with the heroes.
Yeah,
you know, he kind of thinks that they won't want him and stuff. And to be honest, they don't. You know, there's like a whole episode where I'm pretty sure that his little sister gets into his lab and he has to mind her for the day. And all of that good stuff.
Yeah. That's adorable. He does give me, and also with the whole sort of horrible rich parents, kind of gives me sort of James from Team Rocket kind of vibes as well. And look, I took one look at Pokemon, I was like, that guy, the idiot, really camp idiot.
Ooh,
that's the one for me.
I'm so on board, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I better avoid it, or else I might also fall into a summer tryst.
And then I'd be like, how could you? Well, first of all, have you seen that meme that's like, what, I can't remember the exact wording, but it's like, oh my god, you're so stupid, taking off my clothes.
Yes. I was like being like, it's sort of making fun of these people who, what are they, the people who reckon that they are only attracted to intelligent people. What do they call themselves?
Asexuals.
Oh god, yeah, it's like, actually, oh, you're into,
I wish I didn't know that, but I,
yeah,
do.
It's like, you know what you mean is you like hot people who've read the same books as you. Yeah. That's what you mean. But yeah, it was making fun of those
yeah,
and pretentious gits. I like dummies.
Yeah, it's like him. What kind of animal is the Pink Panther? Oh, me taking off my clothes. Oh my god,
oh my god, you're so stupid. Well, yeah. We're going to move on to somebody who I don't think is stupid. So choice two, she is the fun-loving trickster, thousand-year-old bass-playing half vampire. She drinks the color red, and she's in love with a princess who is partially sugar. It's the fun yet angsty nuclear war survivor, Marceline the Vampire Queen from Adventure Time. We've got another angsty goth.
This is it. God. I know. So Adventure Time came out in 2010, and I remember when I first started watching it because I was in my second year of college, and I was not really enjoying myself. So Adventure Time, I really got, and to be honest, again, we didn't have a home computer in my house. I didn't have any access to the internet until I got my laptop when I was going to college, because just, I mean, it still is very bad, but broadband and Wi-Fi in Ireland was not a thing when I was a teenager. Twas the odd family that had a computer in their home. And if I wanted to go on Bebo, you know, my dad had to bring me into his office when he was doing photocopying, and he was like, you've 20 minutes. So, oh no, the panic. So I didn't get access again to, you know, fandom spaces or watching things online or anything like that until I went to college, and then suddenly I had access to these websites where I could watch cartoons when they came out, and it was, you know, a whole revelation. Because yeah, I just, you know, I enjoy cartoons, but specifically at that time I was studying law, international law. It's, you know, it just really wasn't my thing, and I was kind of into my second year, knew that I was going to be doing it for two more years, and I really just got very heavily drawn into cartoons because and particularly Adventure Time, because it's just so nice. But not only, it started out obviously very simplistic, but it caught my attention very quickly because, you know, that mythology of the show started to arise. And then I, because initially I was watching because I was like, oh, this is so nice, this is so fun, this is so quirky. Yeah. And then they started to layer in
it's post-apocalyptic. Got that sort of, it's got that real innocence. So I've only watched a little bit of Adventure Time, but yeah, it's got that. If you're listening and you haven't seen it, it's got this real sort of innocence to it. It's almost like it's really surreal and wacky, like a sort of Looney Tunes kind of world. But then you find out that the reason it's so surreal and weird is because, yeah, there was a big old nuclear war that they call the Mushroom War. And it just wrecked everything.
And what's so hilarious is that it's only when you kind of look back and you go, oh, you know, they reference the Mushroom War, but like there's talking cupcakes. So you're just like, the mushrooms had a war. And it's like, oh no, those were the you know, so they just start layering in that mythology, but never in a way that where it kind of gets, you know, grim dark, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they keep it light.
But it just adds to the mythos of the show. So obviously that caught my attention. And then again, what they do with Marceline is, again, just this incredible. Her story has such depth and spans. Mm. They really flesh it out despite the fact that she's, you know, 1,000 years old, which again is hilarious. Very similar to Jack Spicer. She had her whole own story going on before any of the Adventure Time stuff took place. So she's the daughter of a human and a demon lord. And that's just completely separate. The reason she survived the apocalypse was because she was like a demon who couldn't die. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
She just had her own thing going on, and that's just never made a main part of the story. But I think Pendleton Ward once said that she was one of his favorite characters, specifically because he actually doesn't know her whole story. So I thought that was really interesting. She said she's one of the few characters that has, you know, years and years and years where we don't know what happened to her.
Yeah, she's kind of got the tie to the past, and I was sort of reading up on it, she's like got a lot of the sort of emotional weight, especially sort of the emotional weight of you know, the lore of the world that sort of gets tied to her.
Yes, and then obviously she's got the relationship with, I don't know if you know this, but the Ice King?
No, I didn't know this.
Okay, well, I don't want to spoil it for you in case you do end up watching it. But
No, just spoil away.
Okay, well, for anyone who's not seen it, and maybe doesn't want to be spoiled, I'm going to spoil it. But essentially, again, this is just revealed way down the line. He lived before the Mushroom War as well. He was originally a scientist named Simon, who put on the crown because his... Oh God, it's been so long since I've actually watched it. Because that's it. It's been coming out over the course of like 12 years.
Sure.
And there's 10 seasons. But his fiance died, and the crown he's wearing, he can manipulate reality, something along those lines. But he put it on and it started turning him insane. And so that's how he survived the apocalypse. But himself and Marcy met when she was still a small child after the apocalypse, because she was a little girl. And he took care of her at first, but then he started slowly losing his mind until he became the Ice King. So you have that whole tragedy of that story. But then what I'm going to get into properly, because obviously you've got Princess Bubblegum and Marceline's relationship, which, you know, everyone was already shipping them, you know. I'm not a major shipper. I'm you know, I love a lot of shows and things like that, but I wouldn't say there's a lot of shows where I pick two characters that may not be overtly together in the plot, and I'm like, I really hope they get together. The only two I can ever think of are Marceline and Bubblegum and Will and Hannibal, and you know, those are the only two different spectrums happening. But you know, so for me, for, you know, Marcy and Bubblegum, it was just really fun watching. And I just enjoyed them both as characters. Also enjoyed the fact, one of the best things about them, I, well, not the best things, but I just loved how they change their clothes. They don't, it's not like that classic cartoon thing where they wear the same clothes all the time.
Yeah.
They wear like different outfits. Their outfits are so cute. Aww. It's really nice. But so essentially, yeah, so I was loving these characters, had my crush on Marceline, thought she was just the bee's knees. And then we got to season three, and this was season three. You know, it kind of happened so early, which when I looked back on it, I couldn't believe. Season three aired in 2011, episode 10, What Was Missing? And that was the episode where it was heavily implied that Marceline and Bubblegum used to be ex-girlfriends.
Yeah, so, she sings a song. La, da, 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 da. I'm gonna bury you in the ground. La, da, 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 da. I'm gonna bury you with my sound. I'm gonna drink the red from your pretty pink face. I'm gonna...
Marceline, that's too distasteful.
Oh, you don't like that? Or do you just not like me?
Sorry, I don't treat you like a goddess. Is that what you want me to do? Sorry, I don't treat you like you're perfect, like all your little loyal subjects do. Sorry, I'm not made of sugar. Am I not sweet enough for you? Is that why you always avoid me? That must be such an inconvenience to you. Well, I'm just your
I just remember my face going so hot. But I just couldn't believe they were doing this. And obviously this was back before Steven Universe. It was back before She-Ra. I mean, well, I think Steven Universe might have been kicking off roughly around the same time. But, you know, certainly before they got to any of the more overt
stuff. Yeah, I think before they made it canon that Garnet is a lesbian couple.
She is, in fact, yes. So it was just such a like really shocking moment that I couldn't believe that they just did that. And I was like, did I imagine that? Did I imagine that? And I was kind of going on, you know, online to see, like, does anyone else am I just layering something that's not here? But obviously not. There was that massive reaction. Yeah. And then finally in 2018 for the final episode, you know, it just grew and grew then with more and more episodes where it was more and more overt to anyone who not just wanted to see it but could see it that they were clearly portraying a developing relationship. It was so clearly being done. And I just, even when I got to the point that I kind of fell off the Adventure Time wagon for a while, I always tuned in for every single episode that apparently was going to star Marceline and Princess Bubblegum. And and then for the finale episode in 2018, they kissed canonically. Yay! And I would like to take this opportunity to thank Hannah K. Nystrom for that kiss, because in my research, just to make sure I was getting my facts right, she storyboarded that kiss and it was not in the script. And apparently the director said she wrote in her notes, just come on, with an exclamation point. And he said, well, I can't argue with that. So I'm like, thank you, Hannah. So that was just incredible. And then since then, they've starred in, again, just going so, after that, it's like, the Adventure Time crew were like, that's it, we've done it. And they did the little short episode Obsidian, which is basically about Marceline and Bubblegum having a fight over why they broke up in the first place and reconciling, you know. And it's again, another case. It's just so clear that they're in a relationship.
Lovely.
So, yeah, I just wanted to have my little gush about that, because that certainly for me was definitely around the time that I, you know, started realizing that I was bi and stuff like that. So Marceline and that whole relationship is very intertwined in that and that realization. But, you know, I suppose just to briefly talk about Marceline herself, I mean, she's so cool.
She is.
She's so cool. And again, all her outfits are amazing. Have you heard the Willow Smith song Marceline?
I haven't, no.
Okay, she wrote a song and it is basically a fan song for Adventure Time where she's wooing Marceline.
It's so cute, it's a
really good song. It's very poignant. And yeah, so I would be listening to that. And it's like, Marceline, I'm coming to get you, girl. And it's like, yeah. Aww. And it's very romantic. So yeah, no, Marceline is the absolute bomb. She's got so much depth to her character, and she's so flirty too. Immediately when she rocked up, I mean, from the instance she was introduced, she was so flirty with Princess Bubblegum. She's like, hi, Bonnabelle. And it's like, oh. So yes, big crush on Marceline, and I'm so glad that she got her happy ending.
Yes. Oh, that, and that is really, really lovely. Because I think after like the little song where all the fans were going, is that what I think that is? Apparently they did like walk it back a little bit. They tried to walk it back because they're like trying to sell to like countries where they've still got homophobic laws and where homophobia is still fine. I'm really, really glad. I mean, it's not like, I kind of feel like maybe they sort of, they walked, I mean, she did get a happy ending at the end, but maybe they sort of walked so that Steven Universe could run, because with Steven Universe, it's like, no, they're getting married, and they're getting married in a really important episode in terms of the plot. So if you don't want to watch them getting married, you can't have that episode where big things happen. So fuck off.
and so two things to say to that is that Rebecca Sugar was heavily involved in Marceline's storylines.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so she worked on Adventure Time, and she wrote, I think she was heavily involved in constructing a lot of Marceline's storylines and things like that, so she would have been very involved in that. And then also just on that point, I also love how, so apparently in some of those countries, they actually dubbed Ruby's voice in with a man's voice.
Yes. So and then they put Ruby in a dress. But fuck you! Right, so now you've got a man wearing a dress getting married to a woman wearing a tux. Fuck you!
Baller move. Amazing. Yeah, no, so I was like, what a move.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got She-Ra out of that and everything.
Love new She-Ra. Yeah. I love that at the end she was just like, fuck it, everyone gets together with somebody else. We're going to have lesbian couples. We're going to have, like, male-male couples. We're going to have, like, bunch of male-female characters. Just fuck it. Just everyone's in love.
Yeah. Also, can I flag, though, in She-Ra, I love... what's her name with the pigtails getting together with the bad guy?
Entrapta
getting together with her
with one of the Hordax, because there were lots of Hordax. So her friendship helped Hordak sort of go on this one Hordak go on a redemptive arc. She also loved Wrong Hordak, who was a clone who hadn't developed properly, so he was a bit of a dimwit. Oh,
I love that. Just the nerdy.
I love Entrapta. I love
bad guy. Hilarious.
Yeah, Entrapta kind of feels kind of autistic coded as well, and it was sort of interesting to have that character, who was initially a villain in the original She-Ra, to sort of show somebody who is sort of very techie and very into machines or something, you know, show her being very loving and very caring while also...
Definitely, I appreciate how they made a big point of showing that she does care, and she just doesn't show it the same way other people do, or she's...
And that can confuse people.
Yeah, yes, or she understands that you're upset, but your priorities aren't the same, so she doesn't understand why, and maybe if you were clearer in explaining why you were upset that she wasn't paying attention to this thing. You know, I just thought it was done quite well, and I would agree with you that that's how I thought she came across too.
Mm. Anyway, we've got on a bit of a tangent, but yeah, new She-Ra, absolutely love new She-Ra. Oh, man. Scorpia, played by the lady who plays Dina from Superstore, who I've got a big old crush on.
Dina,
Lauren Ash, just this big, friendly. She's a villain, but she's big and friendly, and she just wants hugs, even though she's got claws and a stinger.
Yeah, and I loved that when they were going to the ball, Catra was in the suit and she was in the nice dress. That was just
she was
really
a beautiful
nice.
Dress.
I just felt like, because I was like, Scorpio would. She wants to wear a nice dress and look nice.
Anyway, moving on from lesbians in beautiful dresses, let's move on to something completely different. Yes! So choice three is a mute, traumatized survivor of horrible experiments from a parallel world. He's made out of living bandages and he's got a grudge against a sheep. It's Spidey's friend from Spider-Man Unlimited, Kit Hoskins, aka the human mummy. I imagine that if you're listening, you have not heard of this guy. I had not heard of this guy. May please tell us about Kit Hoskins.
Okay. So when you said to me, I'm doing a podcast about cartoon characters that you might have had a crush on, and I instantly thought, I'm going to look for that guy again. Every so often, I'm like every 6 months or so, I sit down in front of my laptop and I start Googling man, living bandages, blonde hair, cartoon character. Nothing comes up. Mostly, you know that guy from Doom Patrol? I get a lot of him. Couldn't find, used Akinator, was trying to use Akinator to get him to get for me. And I never could find him. But I knew that when I was very, very small, I watched a television show and that there was a character in it who had a very traumatic backstory that really affected me. And I think based on the airing of the dates, I think I was about 9 years old. Mm. And all I know is that it so affected me that I could not stop thinking about the episode where we saw his trauma. It was so upsetting. You know, I was nine. I was obsessed with him, you know, thinking about, you know, all his character arc, all of this. So I was there, and I actually got onto my sister and I was saying to her that I really wanted to talk about this character, but I couldn't find him. I was like, I'm pretty sure he was in Marvel, but I can't find anything about him. He's not an X-Men. Kind of thought he might be an X-Men because there's so many of those.
Yeah.
Not a hope. The next day she gets on to me going, I found him. I actually need to ask her how she found him, because even if you put his name into YouTube, there's nothing, not even any tips on YouTube or anything. So I need to sit down with her and I need to ask her how she found him. So she gave me the name. His name is Kit Hoskins. He was in Spider-Man Unlimited. Spider-Man Unlimited had one season. It was cancelled after one season and it had 13 episodes. Wow. It is extremely low budget and it was commissioned like that. As far as when I went back to have a little bit of a read up on it, they specifically wanted a low budget Spider-Man cartoon. The earliest airing of it was in 1999. And then as far as that, I couldn't have been more than around 11 because it stopped airing in 2001. So that's our window.
Yeah.
So Kit Hoskins, out of 13 episodes, he's only in 6 episodes, and in 5 of them, he's just a background character. He only features as an actual character in one episode. You have no idea how shocked I was when I realized this. That single episode, and to be honest, when I think about when I watched this, I would have been in my child minders after school, because my mom taught school, and when I was 9 years old, my school would have finished before her school was finished, so I went to a child minder's house. That child minder had the television channels where the cartoons were on, you know, and I'm pretty sure I just happened to catch the single episode
that he was in.
He featured as the main character, and that's pretty much the only episode he's in for the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And it so affected me that I had built up in my mind that he was a main character in
You're sitting there through all the MCU movies. When's Kit Hoskins going to come up? Where's his origin story?
I swear to God, I was thinking that I thought he was the main character in a superhero group, that he, you know, there was character arcs across seasons, you know, and when I found him, I was thinking, oh my God, I might go back and watch this. Gabby, I hadn't seen any of it. All I'd seen was one episode in which he featured, and then I was obsessed with him, a 9-year-old girl obsessed with this character who did not speak and was made of bandages. Okay, so let's get into Kit Hoskins. So he can't talk. He is wearing this big red coat. He wears sunglasses, so you can't see his eyes. You can kind of make out his expressions through kind of the way the glints in the sunglasses shift. And then he's got this blonde floppy hair. Essentially what happened to him, and again, rewatching the episode, I remembered almost every single bit of it. It was incredible. And again, had not seen it since I was between 9 or 11. So the Spider-Man, this series of Spider-Man takes place in an alternate universe where humans are being downtrodden by, I think they're invading aliens called high evolutionaries, but they all kind of look like animals.
Sure.
And the humans are then relegated to second class. And there's this one Ram-like character. I think his name is Dr. Rami, which I've kind of just gotten now. But he's abducting children off the street and experimenting on them. So we get, so the episode revolves around Git breaking into that scientist in the present day, because he's a part of the human resistance. He's breaking into that scientist's laboratory, stealing a biological weapon and taking it. And that's a part of a plan. But what they find out after the fact is that that weapon is going to explode on a timer, which they were not aware of once it was removed from the lab. So it's a combination of the good guys and the bad guys have to join together to find Git, because he doesn't know the bomb's going to go off.
Right.
And then we see Git moving through the city having flashbacks, because he was abducted when he was a small boy, and he was a normal little boy. He was an orphan on the street, and he was experimented on, and that's how he became a living bandages, essentially. Yeah. He's got no body. He's just got his bandages. The episodes are, I mean, they're 20 minutes long, and I just couldn't believe how quickly things happened. Whereas, like, in my head, so we get these sepia flashbacks of him as a small child, and he wears the same vest as an adult as he does.
Of course he does.
Yeah, so it's like
they always do.
Yeah, it's like a weird woolen crop top on him, you know, but it's just, you know, it's just adding to like the traumatic element of it, you know.
Yeah, I've been wearing the same crop top for 20 years.
This is it. And he, as a small child, he's there. It's Christmas. He's got a lunchbox full of Christmas decorations, presumably from his home, which he no longer lives in. He has a little paper star that gets caught in the wind and blows down an alley. He goes down the alley, and there's Dr. Rami, and he looks so scared. And he gives the doctor a sweet, offers the doctor a sweet, and the doctor grabs his arm and snatches him. You know, and as I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, I remember this. But in my childhood brain, it was like, like slow motion, like I was wide-eyed, like this is the most, and then he was taken away and experimented on, you know, and it was so I mean, it's the bones of about 5 seconds in the episode, but it was just comparing that to my memory of it, I still can't get over how affected I was by the whole thing.
It's his trauma.
So again, as mentioned, as an adult, he's still wearing the same vest top he wore as a child. He still uses his little lunchbox, but he stores bombs in it now.
Oh.
And but I just cannot overstate the extent to which I had created this entire character arc in my head that I thought like I had merely forgotten, but actually never existed. Because I went on then, and this is what I was talking about at the start of the episode, talking about how we go in, we can just flesh out these characters and they'll never change, and they'll never, you know, they'll never disappoint us because that's them. They're right there. But I hadn't even realized I had done this with this character, where again, I'm pretty sure I made up my own little OC, you know, and I was imagining myself in that world, et cetera, inserting myself into the plot, which did not exist.
And I guess it exists because it exists in your mind.
But this is it, apparently so. And that's how hard I imagined it. And that's how that's how invested I was in it. That like a solid 20 years later, I was still idly Googling to see if I could find out what became of my long lost childhood love.
That's delightful. So you need to get into Hollywood, basically. The plan is you get into Hollywood. good. Yeah. You get sort of given like your own show, sort of MCU spin-off Disney Plus show, like Loki and stuff like that, and you call it Git. You get an eight episode series to tell the story that happened in your head.
In my head, yeah. That's. But can I just say one thing? I really did appreciate about the episode, though. It actually, and I feel like that doesn't get to happen enough in these kind of old children's cartoons. But Git gets to beat the shit out of his
mother.
He just gets to absolutely pummel him. Like, there's a moment where they're just like, oh, you know, it's not, you know, because they have to give the scientist back the bomb, essentially, because he's the only one who can contain it. So Git has to come to terms with handing this back to the man who turned him into what he is.
Yeah.
And he just, you think that he's just going to take the high road. And then the doctor says something snotty. And I need to reiterate, he's magic bandages. He knows how to fight with bandages. He just fucking starts pummeling him, and it's so satisfying. He just starts beating the shit out of him with his fists.
Excellent.
Rough and ready, on the dirt, and it is fantastic. So that was one thing I hugely appreciated out of the episode. I was like, more victims should get to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, that is excellent. Well, I've got one last question for you, which is that if I had the power to bring one of these characters into the real world and make them flesh and blood, who would you choose and would you pursue that person?
Gee, well, I'm not going to pick Jack Spicer because he definitely was, he's, you know, your teenage boyfriend that you look back on and you're like, oh, I can't, I was mental about him, but God, is he annoying. And then look, Marceline is taken. So I suppose it does have to be Git Hoskins, which
Git!
Is because he is bandages, is the thing. And that's another thing, you know, that you know, going for characters that are, you know, intangible or, you know, like Deadpool predominantly like never show their face and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's a big thing as well. Don't know how that would work. He is just bandages. And he does
mute
not talk.
Bandages.
But here's the thing, you know, if he is living out that wonderful intricate plot line that I have developed for him in my head, I think we're going to be very, very happy together.
Ah, I am so glad for you and the mute bandage man. Before you go, is there anything you'd like to give a shout out about?
Well, I am in a couple of audio drama podcasts. If we're talking to podcast and fans, as mentioned, I'm in the Sylph Versus season 2. That is going to be, we're ramping up to start recording for that soon. I'm in the first season of Omen, which just finished coming out, and I'm in the upcoming The Secret of St. Kilda, which is another audio drama podcast from Haggis and Dragon Productions. So that's going to be a good one. Big cast for that, and we're very excited about it.
Ooh, cool. Oh, well, thank you ever so much.
Thanks so much for having me. This was so fun, and it was actually a really lovely opportunity to take a walk down nostalgia memory lane.
Huge thanks to Maeve de Brun. I'm Gabby Hutchison Crouch. For more credits and details, see @curiously_drawn on Twitter.